So I'm going to stop now and bring up the next speaker. This is just to sort of broaden our discussion about things that we can do for our patients to reduce their risk for relapse and improve the quality of their survivorship. So I'm going to ask Nancy to come up. Nancy Howe is a colleague and collaborator of ours at Mayo. Her expertise is in physical activity and the benefits of physical activity in breast cancer and in cancer survivorship in general. And she's going to speak for a few minutes today about the value of adjuvant physical activity strategies for breast cancer survivorship.
Hello, everyone. Let's see if is this good? You can hear me. So I have just one primary objective today, and I plan to provide you with the definitive science that confirms that every cancer patient can and should be exercising consistently during treatment and beyond. I'm sure that your patients ask you to recommend different strategies to aid and promote their healing from their surgery. And I hope that you will find it helpful to have this information when you talk with your patients about exercise and its proven benefits. By way of introduction, let me explain how I came to be such an advocate for exercise. This is me in 1990. I was 36 years old, and this was my story profiled in Runner's World. 7 years later, I had a very different story. I was a daily exerciser and a conscientious eater, and I got cancer in my throat anyway. As late as 1999, the value of exercising during treatment was still a secret. My experience was so surprising that my strong recovery was the focus of a four-page spread in the national magazine Prevention. In one sense, I was lucky. My treatment occurred during a period of partnership and innovation among oncology nurses and physical medicine MDs. In the 1990s, oncology nurses, led by Dr. Merrill Winningham, started asking if cancer patients who engaged in exercise might experience benefits similar to the huge gains achieved by cardiac patients. But research was problematic. There were so many different cancers and so many different treatment combinations to compare. It took a lot of time. Now, 25 years later, the results are definitive. Over and over in hundreds of trials, it has been proven that structured exercise is safe for all cancer patients. The proven benefits for patients who exercise during treatment read like a wonder drug. In every area that we measure, exercise during treatment improves outcomes. The same holds true for exercise after treatment. In your syllabus on page 59, you'll find a timeline of the 25-year effort to expand knowledge about exercise and its benefits for cancer patients. I created the timeline to serve two purposes. First, I want to provide you with all the research citations you need to access the most significant studies yourself. Second, I want to put the research in context. So let me take a few moments to highlight the most significant milestones on that timeline. I'm going to start with a review of the foundational science. The data is clear-cut. Exercise is safe and beneficial for all patients, regardless of cancer type, cancer stage, or the patient's level of debilitation. Even more, recent research suggests that to date we have been too tentative. More exercise during treatment seems to yield greater benefits. 6 years ago, in 2009, oncologists and exercise physiologists develop clear guidelines for exercise for cancer patients. These guidelines embrace the full spectrum of physical activity that has generated positive results in clinical research. From structured exercise on one end to meditative movements like yoga and tai chi on the other. In 2012, the field of physical medicine defined a cancer exercise prescription as including five components. The first four are the core of any individualized exercise program: the form and type of exercise, the volume, the desired intensity, and a proposed progression. The fifth component is what is unique to a cancer patient. A cancer exercise prescription starts with the information contained on the oncologist's referral. An exercise professional will ask your patient for a detailed exercise history and also to describe his or her very particular cancer treatment experience. What has been the treatment? What have been the side effects? If the exercise professional has any questions, or if the patient seems uncertain, we call the oncologist directly. We use all of this to create the exercise prescription and to identify any specific contraindications or adaptations that might be required. Ongoing research continues to teach us the most effective approaches to exercise testing and to development of an exercise prescription. The range of accepted certifications reflects the market's burgeoning interest in exercise as a profitable service. The oldest credential, offered by the Rocky Mountain Institute at the University of Northern Colorado, requires a postgraduate degree, 40 hours of on-site participation, and practicum testing with cancer patients at the university's on-site exercise rehab center. The newest credential, the AMA-sponsored EIM certification, was designed to provide the entire healthcare system with a standardized, easy-to-acquire credential that physicians could recognize and trust. The EIM certification is earned during a 1 to 2 day workshop. Some researchers have invested significant resources, both time and money, developing programs and taking them through clinical trials. The Holy Grail is a protocol that is scalable, easy to replicate, and proven effective in clinical trials. But within these parameters, researchers have developed programs that contain wildly different components. These components often reflect a particular researcher's personal interests and his or her philosophy about the best approach to exercise delivery. So far, not a single one of these programs developed has been adopted by a significant number of clinical settings. As interest in exercise intensifies, for-profit entrepreneurs are rapidly entering the market. This is particularly true for commercial fitness centers, where the demand for personal training services has leveled off or declined. Clearly, there is a need to help cancer survivors become more active. More attention is paid to breast cancer survivors because most of the research documenting the benefits of exercise focused on breast cancer patients. Breast cancer survivors are the group that researchers know best, and all the evidence shows that we are missing a tremendous opportunity. Breast cancer survivors are not gaining the benefits of exercise because we don't supply the programs that they need. So what is the broken link? Why aren't oncologists promoting the wonder drug benefits of exercise? Simply put, we don't know how to make it happen. Exercise improves outcomes. Patients thrive. So what is holding oncologists back? What is the obstacle preventing exercise referrals? Surgeons and oncologists are fiercely protective of their patients' health, and right now, there is no standard of care. Neither surgeons nor oncologists can give patients a referral for an exercise prescription until everyone agrees on the protocol that will be used to fill the prescription. Even if there is a known and accepted exercise program available in the community, physicians have no control over the quality of the exercise leader or the program delivery. Research indicates that uncertainty about expertise is the reason why most oncologists and surgeons don't talk to patients about exercise. The last obstacle is the bottom line, money. Cardiac rehab units are supported by insurance coverage for cardiac rehab. Insurance pays for the rows of treadmills and the full staff of physiologists. Insurance providers do not now reimburse for exercise prescribed by oncologists, and the future reimbursement is hugely uncertain. Reimbursement schedules depend on predictability. Cancer treatment and patient response is highly individual, with multiple variables contributing to a final exercise prescription. It is highly unlikely that insurance providers will adopt the cardiac rehab model for cancer survivors anytime soon. So how is the larger oncology community responding to the challenge? Many cancer centers are implementing a new model of service delivery that provides patients with a comprehensive approach to integrative medical therapies. Structure and exercise and nutrition are at the top of the list as the two most highly researched and widely accepted complementary therapies. Patients are responding to information about exercise and becoming more proactive about their health. Product sales of fitness guides and activity trackers are exploding, although results to date are inconclusive. Individual partners between oncologists and exercise providers are paving the way for broader acceptance. Patients today respond far more positively to a clinician's brief but sincere recommendation to exercise. Adherence rates are skyrocketing in anecdotal data. And this data is from the one-year collaboration between Dr. Northfeld and me. So what can you do if you want to see your patients receive the benefits of exercise? I suggest that you forcefully encourage your patients to ask their medical oncologist for an exercise referral as early as possible. If it is appropriate, provide any helpful information about particular exercises that you might recommend or that you'd like your patient to avoid. So I hope that I've accomplished my initial objective. You now have data that you can read and cite, proving that every cancer patient should and can be exercising consistently during treatment and beyond. And you also have information to help you talk with your patients about the benefits of exercise. I hope that you will join me in advocating exercise as an integral component of cancer care going forward. Thanks. That's all I have.